If you're a Rock Under Fire listener who loves to read, if you like history and you don't mind politics with your rock and roll, it's all of the above, albeit some controversy. The murder of John Lennon, the evolution of Bruce Springsteen, and the birth of the Reagan era. It was 1980, and the climate was changing. Autumn and Everything After, a book by yours truly. Available everywhere books are sold, in soft cover editions, in ebook editions. Listen, fuckers, I have 19 kids to feed. I'm just trying to sell some books here. And it's a really good book.
They're all named Mike.
Even if you don't like said people. All right, what's going on, Pat? What's going on this time?
None. I was thinking about your 19 children all named Mike.
Nice, nice, nice.
Oh, I don't know, man. It's it's my older daughter's birthday, and it always, while that's such a great day, it always reminds me of the passing of Chris Cornell.
This time of year, right?
Yeah, yeah, and you know what a tremendous loss he was to the rock community, man.
Right.
So I've been listening to a little bit of Audio Slave and Soundgarden. Getting my jam onto that.
Well, I mean, the thing I texted you earlier in the week about was that I wanted to talk about right at the outset was what we were talking about last time, the possible cancellation once again of some major tours. And the first thing, as soon as this week opened, the first thing I saw was that the stadium tour has been postponed once again.
You mean the one where Motley Crue were never going to tour again? That one?
That one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. I remember now.
Yeah.
We're never going to tour again. Holy shit, I need some money. Maybe you call the guys, we better tour again.
My artsy-fartsy, elitist-centric mind said, swore never to make fun of these groups that they were doing a stadium tour, but the fact that they call it the stadium tour is just kind of like, oh, we're playing a stadium.
They had to take two other acts out with them to do it. They had to take
two or three other acts and John Get.
Look, I'll give Motley Crue their day, but they're not filling the stadium on their own. They're just not. They're not the Stones. They're not Bruce. They're not Pearl Jam. They're not U2. There's not many bands that can do it anymore. There's just not.
No, you know, definitely under 10. Definitely under 10 acts.
And those few that can, not only do they sell out a stadium, but I don't know, let's use Bruce as an example here. That guy sells out, you know, the Meadowlands three or four, five, six nights in a row, man. I mean, that's a hot ticket when he's in town.
I just saw, you know,
the Stones too. They do the same thing.
Journey and Foo Fighters are now confirmed for Lollapalooza.
I heard that on the radio today, actually.
Happening July 29th through August 1st. What is it? How long has it been a four-day festival? How long before they started having bands that was kind of like the anti what Lollapalooza was supposed to be about initially?
Well, I think it's been a few years since they started doing it in Chicago. I don't remember the name of the park, but since they started keeping it in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they started doing 3 days, like a three, I don't know if it was 4 days, but I'm certain that it was 2 to 3 days that they did a multiple day event there at the park. If I had to guess, 5-8 years.
Did it start as a tour?
Your guess is as good as mine. I always remembered it as a tour. Maybe it started in Chicago and then they went on the road with it. I don't know.
The first year with Jane's Addiction and
early 90s.
Henry Rollins was on that tour.
My brother went to maybe the second or the third one. Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Chili Peppers. It was a huge venue. Ice Cube. My brother said Ice Cube tore that place apart, bro. He said Ice Cube was amazing. I mean, he went to see Pearl Jam. That was like the whole reason why he went. Yeah. But he said Ice Cube put on one hell of a show.
That was one of the first years, right?
Yeah, it was in the early years. Can you imagine those thousands of white kids just with their arms up and Ice Cube just leading the charge? You know what I mean?
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that. Because, well, what was their response to Ice Cube?
My brother said the place went nuts.
Right? Yeah. At that point, man, it was just like the writing was on the wall that, you know, I mean, Rock's days were numbered as a mainstream entity.
In those days, Ice Cube in particular was just coming, you know, he was out of NWA, had some really solid solo stuff. Dr. Dre was coming, was coming on strong.
Right.
So that West Coast, that West Coast style of rap was really coming, like really hit hard. It was really popular. Yeah. You know, everything broke off of NWA because all those guys were NWA guys. And so once that, you know, once that split, and they split up and started going their own way, like hip hop took a really interesting turn at that point, you know, because there was these wars, you know, everybody hated Eazy-E. Eazy-E hated them. It was just this, you know, they were poking and jabbing at everybody.
Yeah.
You know, Compton was not like a safe place, you know, it was craziness. It was a good time for rap music, though.
It's interesting that you bring that up because we're going on 40 years next week. Starting next week will be marked the 40th anniversary of the beginning of the Clash's run at Bonds International Casino in New York City, right in Times Square. Bonds was like a dance club. What became a dance club? I mean, Bonds goes back to, like, you look at pictures from Times Square of the 1940s and you see Bonds. Right. But they were supposed to do 8 shows. And because they oversold like thousands and thousands and thousands of tickets, I think the capacity was supposed to be 1,500. And they had like 3,500 people jammed in there. The first night, the fire department came in and shut that shit down. Wow. You know, so a lot of people were, so by the Saturday show, they had matinees. So Clash was doing an all ages show on a Saturday afternoon, which was supposed to be the third show. And then the night show was supposed to be the fourth show, and the police shut it down. So they had a riot in Times Square. So, I mean, this is what basically brought the Clash into superstar. Yeah. The Clash ended up doing 17 shows to honor every ticket that was sold. So they're like, we're going to have to keep this at a certain capacity. So everybody that got a ticket was then rescheduled to a certain date. And, you know, consequently, a lot of shows had to get canceled. And a lot of promoters and managers had to agree that they were going to let the Clash play for another 3 weeks.
That's so nuts.
Yeah. So the point in bringing that up to speak to Ice Cube doing those shows is that they had Grandmaster Flash as their opening act on the first night. And they threw shit at him, man. They threw bottles at him. They booed him. They completely fucking abused those guys, man.
It's funny. I just watched a documentary on Amazon Prime about the history of thrash, and Alice in Chains ended up on a tour with like Anthrax and maybe Slayer, or it was this crazy thing where I think Overkill had to back out, so they brought in Alice in Chains, and it was definitely Anthrax, because Scott Ian was like, I gotta give it to these fucking guys, they were not fresh and they were just fucking hated, yet night after night after fucking night they went out there and played their shit and played their set. And, you know, Scott Ian became very good friends with Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains, like during that period. And he goes, I used to sit from the sidelines and just watch these guys get fucking booed with beer bottles thrown at them. And he goes, but they did their fucking thing, man. And he goes, now look at what Alice in Chains had become. You know, talk about cutting your teeth. That's a tough fucking crowd to cut your teeth on, a thrash crowd. Or in this case, Ice Cube cutting his teeth on a grunge crowd.
That was still back in the 80s.
Yeah. Just before they broke. So you're looking at maybe 89.
Could be
later.
Anyway, I marked some stuff down here, man. I got to read some of this. Oh, you were saying something about you were watching Led Zeppelin's.
I was listening to that. Yeah.
The Atlantic. 40th anniversary of Atlantic or something, from 1988. Yeah. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. That was Carol Miller on 104.3 here in our area in New York. She does this thing every night called Get the Lead Out at 8 o'clock.
Does she still do that?
Yeah. Every day. But on Monday, they call it Get the Lead Out XL or something. So it's an hour long of Zeppelin, and they spotlight a lot of different things. Like one week they did the Coverdale Page project. They talked extensively about that and had interviews with Coverdale, interviews with Page about that whole record, which I think was a little underrated, actually. I enjoyed it. But last week, I believe it was that 40th anniversary of Atlantic Records. And I think that was the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, that Zeppelin had gotten back together to play a live show.
Because, no, it was the second time because they...
Oh, right, Live Aid. You had Live Aid.
Live
right.
Aid was a fucking disaster.
Right,
and then they,
right.
And then they got together 3 years later.
Right. But the thing, Live Aid, they had Phil... Right, and the difference in Atlantic was that they had Jason.
Yeah, and, right. Right.
And the cool thing about it was John Paul Jones in an interview was talking, because Carol plays some of those interviews, some of the interviews, was saying that John Paul Jones was saying that Jason knew everything. Like he goes, oh, well, in 75, you guys did this and you rolled right into that and you played it like this. And he just like, and John Paul Jones said it was just such a comfort to have that kid, who he was, obviously, but to have all that knowledge that, you know, that we had probably forgotten. And he was just so forward with it. And he just, he like lit a fire underneath the guys more or less. And it sounded just absolutely phenomenal. Robert sounded terrific. They were tight. They got to, you could tell that they got to rehearse. It wasn't Phil Collins flying across the Atlantic on a Concorde to just jump into drums with them and play with another drummer and half-ass it. It just wasn't that. It was definitely special.
All that for the starving people of Ethiopia to show that you can get on a fucking jet and fly across the Atlantic and play in two different places.
Yeah, that's something else.
How noble of Phil Collins, man. But I mean, sometimes it's really like, it actually helps a lot of these bands to have that younger blood in the band, that even if it's a family member, if it's not a family member, it could be a fan. You know, that can sit there and dictate the band's history and say, look, you did this, 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 and even breathe some fresh life into the group. We've seen that numerous times, Richie Faulkner, and Judas Priest, just getting these guys, Ian Hill and Rob Halford, to dig through their past catalog and pull up these old chestnuts of songs that they haven't touched. Sometimes ever, just to get a fan's perspective on what some fans would really love to hear. I remember watching that Atlantic show very shortly after it happened. Maybe HBO showed it. And I don't remember a damn thing about it. I remember it being better than Live Aid.
Yeah, well, like you said, it was a disaster. Live Aid was a fucking disaster.
Yeah,
and it was probably aside from Queen, it was probably one of the most anticipated performances of that whole Live Aid show.
Yeah, it really was, man. That was probably it. That was like everybody in this, at least in Philly, were waiting to see Zeppelin. Maybe oh, yeah. in London it was the Who.
Queen. I mean, it seemed like Queen. Looking back on it now, it seemed like Queen was a big draw because they hadn't been playing.
Historically, Queen turned out to be the biggest act that day, that them and U2. U2 walked on stage, a very respected cult act, and they walked off the biggest band in the world.
Yeah, they walked off superstars. Yeah, that's a good call.
Queen, historically, later on with the movie, I mean, that really raised, and it really was the best. I think it was the best show that day, Queen.
Madonna, Live Aid, Madonna blew up after that, too.
Yeah, that was her summer of 85.
She was a superstar, yeah. I mean, but she was She was definitely on. What the hell just happened?
Your camera went off.
Yeah, okay, there it is. Right. She was definitely on her way to, I hit the wrong button. She was definitely on her way to start.
We that kind turn of our like cameras off and we still record. I'm sorry. But
yeah, no, that's all good. That just like kind of propelled her.
Because I remember this a couple of months before Live Aid, Madonna had, she started that, I guess, I don't know, what was it, the Virgin Tour? The Virgin Tour. She played like multiple dates at the Garden and Radio City with the Beastie Boys opening up.
Yep.
You know, and so she had already, that was probably her biggest audience up at that point.
Yeah, you know? At that point, yeah, right. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it was a huge event. I mean, besides everybody that was there, I mean, that thing was like nationally televised and it was just the media outlets. And that was a hell of an event. it had its misfires, but I mean, you know.
Speaking of the 80s, Duran Duran have their first new album in about 6 years.
Oh, really?
With Giorgio Moroder. And Licky Lee was one of the better. She's a Swedish singer, songwriter, artist. I was really into her first record. This is their 15th album. It's called Future Past Duran Duran. It's not expected until October 22nd. The first single is out now. It's called Invisible. This is the model. This is the new model for releasing music today, man. This is.
Go ahead. We've got to finish that point.
Man. But you know, yeah. You know, when a new album was coming out, you'd hear about it, you'd read about it, you'd have to go out to your local pharmacy and look at Hit Parade or a Circus or something like that, or Rolling Stone, and then after maybe about 3 weeks to a month after the initial announcement of a record, you'd get the first single. And then there'd be a 45 out there, or maybe a cassette single, followed 3 weeks later by the full record, right? That was always the marketing model. Announcement, very shortly after, the first single, and then within 3 weeks to a month, the latest, the new product, the full new album, right? Now the model is announce the album 5 months ahead of time, and then have 5 months worth of singles. And by the time the album comes out, half the fucking album's been released as singles. That's been the new model. If you notice that, I don't know if you notice that, especially with streaming.
I don't know if they notice single after single after single, but I have noticed that they release music. And then, like you said, the album's not due for like another 5 months.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
let me get the Tums.
Get the metal heads collectively, get them together and bang their fucking heads together while we're at this. Because everybody that's rightfully pissed about Iron Maiden not making it is you know, yeah. We mentioned Judas Priest. Judas Priest has now been snubbed for almost twice the amount of time that Kiss was. And we cannot put Iron Maiden in a Hall of Fame that Judas Priest is involved in. Can we?
No, I'll agree with you on that. I like Iron Maiden better, but I'll give you that.
Arguably, Iron Maiden has been far more successful than Priest ever was. I mean, far more successful globally. Longevity wise, the ability to sell out arenas and stadiums all over the world 40 years later.
Fucking impressive.
Iron Maiden is the shit, man. But in terms of chronological and influential importance, man,
you've got to
put Judas Priest in there first, man.
I agree.
And so be patient. Everybody gets in there eventually.
Not without uproar.
Yeah. And you remember, I mean, we're dealing with politics. We're always dealing with politics. As long as certain people are still around, certain groups are not going to get in.
But, you know, here's the thing. It's basically no different than the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's a fucking popularity contest, is all it is.
This is true.
You know, there are some degenerates in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Flat out racist, degenerate drunks in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame. The all-time hits leader is not in the Hall of Fame. A guy like, let's Ken Griffey Jr. How's he not unanimously voted? Who was the one fucking guy who didn't vote him into the Hall of Fame? Who did that?
I don't know.
You know who does that? The guy, Griffey was arguably one of the best baseball players in his era.
Hmm.
And he didn't get in unanimously. Mariano Rivera did. He was the first guy to do it. And, you know, okay, rightly so. I don't want to use Jeter there because I'm kind of biased. I'm a Yankee fan, so I can't use Jeter there. So it's a popularity contest is really all it is. And these writers, you know, these baseball writers in particular, you can't even – the guy can't even shag a fly ball, and he gets to determine who's in the Hall of Fame and who's not. That irks me. Same with metal.
That's the case with everything. That's the case with everything. With the I see your point.
So I just wanted to drill it down a little bit more because you said the politics and you hit it right on the head. So I just wanted to drill in there a little bit more because these music writers, well, you know, I mean, when do they fucking get it right? I'm going to take a guy like Beck, he's okay. Okay, I could deal with Beck. He's all right.
Did Beck get in? Is he in?
I don't know. I don't even know.
I don't think he's in yet.
I doubt it. I'm just using him as an example here for writers. He is a critic's darling.
Sure.
When Beck has a new record come out, it's holy shit, let's pump the brakes. Beck's got a record coming out. I saw that guy on Saturday Night Live. I'm like, what in the fuck am I watching right here? What is this? Did this guy... He has some good music, but the critics make it sound like he's the next fucking Bob Dylan, for Christ's sakes. I'm like, are you out of your minds? I just don't get it. So until we get real people in there to really vote on bands that should or should not make it, it's just always going to be the same argument year after year.
I just think it's the elitist mentality against metal that don't see metal as a legitimate art form. You know, that's the plain truth, man. It's the baby boom generation's elitist mentality, man, that kind of looks down on certain things like metal. It's too lowbrow for them. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that happening, man. And you know, look, thankfully, people like Tom Morello have now entered the hall in terms of being, you know, voting. And, you know, younger generation artists who are respected by these baby boom critics, who people like Morello have said, listen, you got to put the kids in there. Yeah. You got to put Rush in there. You know what I mean? And they're listening. They are listening slowly but surely, man. They're listening.
Yeah.
They know. They know their generation fucked up by you know, you. Rock and roll doesn't begin and end with the baby boomers, man. It's in their eyes, maybe they thought that was going to be it, you know, and that it was going to last forever with them. But it stops at some point. At some point, it fucking stops. You either keep pushing forward or more rap artists get in. You can't have it both ways.
I'm on record to say this. I love hip hop. You know that. Everybody who knows me knows that. But that's not rock and roll, man. It's not. You want to have a hip-hop Hall of Fame? Every single one of those artists should be in there. Every single one, and then some. But they're not rock and roll. It's completely two different, completely... I don't know, man. It's even some of the R&B artists. I don't grasp that. I don't.
I'm not going to agree or disagree with you on that, man. I think I'm trying to come to terms with that idea, man, and there's a much wider conversation we had. Like we should really do an episode on that. I kind of begs the question, well, what is rock and roll? What is rock and roll? You know, and it's not a question to answer now. I'm just saying that these are questions. There's much bigger questions, you know, and I'm trying to come to terms with, you know, how do we, I think it can be justified that Grandmaster Flash is in the Rock and Roll, you know, but it's.
Are you running out to grab it? Are you running out to grab the new rock record by Jay-Z?
No. Okay. No. But I think.
Are you running out to buy the new hip hop record from Jay-Z? Yeah, I probably will.
Well, I mean, I probably will. I think it's something that we're putting like a time limit on rock music. You know, I mean, Bob Dylan, you mentioned Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan, in Bob Dylan's opinion, rock and roll died in 1959. You know, like rock and roll. If you think about rock and roll, Rock Around the Clock, Jailhouse Rock. You know, the original rock and roll sound, man, which was, you know, which basically later became, they just called rock, because there, you know, there is no rock and roll music in Judas Priest. You know, there's no, you know, like at some point when Judas Priest went thrash, they got rid of the blues. There's no blues in Painkiller. You know,
but I think the structure is still there.
It became a different thing. So I think what happens is, as time goes on, man, you know, it just kind of evolves into different things, man. Is hip hop rock? No, it's not rock. At some point, do they stop calling it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and call it the Music Hall of Fame? Do they call it the Pop Music Hall of Fame? You know, at some point, people didn't consider Picasso and the cubism art. They said, well, that's not art. You know, that's not painting. That's not showing nude figures. This is just a bunch of shapes. Like, you know, at what point were they supposed to stop calling it art? Did they call it something else?
It would be easier for me to swallow if it were the Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree. That was a great point. Absolutely phenomenal point.
It might be something that is just going to evolve, you know, because again, if you go into an art museum, you're going to see all kinds of art. You're going to see Egyptian art. You're going to see Chinese art. You're going to see Asian art in general, you know, Japanese, Indian, Chinese, Tibetan, you know, you're going to see all kinds of stuff. You're going to go on the other side, man. You're going to see European paintings, man. You're going to go in the back. You're going to see medieval sculpture. You're going to see all kinds. You're going to see contemporary stuff. You're going to see stuff from the 20th century and all kind of, it's this big conglomeration of historical periods. And I see the same thing happening with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay. I'm all right with that.
Like, you know, disco is a flavor of maybe not rock and roll, but maybe this, just the idea. The problem is that we call it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think that it was like it should have been like a trial and error thing, because people, again, it's the baby boomers celebrating themselves, man. You know, and they thought it's like be all end all. You know, okay, we're going to start this thing and we're going to honor our forefathers. We're going to honor Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis and Buddy Holly and Elvis Presley and Carl Perkins and all these people, you know, and Johnny Cash and all these people that came before us, and then even the people that came before them, you know, Robert Johnson and Muddy Waters, and, you know, and the blues artists. But at some point, it's going to stop, and nobody after us deserves to get in, man. That's the attitude. That's the attitude, man, and that's where they fucked up. They thought that there was going to be this endless supply of baby boomer artists, man.
Yeah, well.
And that's really where they really didn't consider that it's not going to last forever, man. At some point, different decades happened. The 80s happened. The 90s happened. The 2000s happened. The 2010s happened. Now we're in the fucking 20s again.
Yeah.
The roaring fucking 20s. And here we are, man. All this time worth of music is past, man. And nobody from that generation seems to think any of the last 30 years is worthy of getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yep.
These are not any concrete opinions of mine. This is not what I think. This is just, I'm just putting these possibilities out there. That, you know, maybe what they need to do in the future is just call it the Music Hall of Fame. or the
I don't disagree with that
Hall of Fame or something like that. I don't know. But if you're having a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man, and Jay-Z is going to get into something that Judas Priest is not in yet, then there's a problem. Then I totally 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
It's about money. Money, 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 man. What's going to bring people to their museum? What's the demographic? What demographic are they chasing?
Yeah.
They need to bring people to their museum. At some point, they said, look, it's going to be more interesting if Kiss is in your museum. It's going to be more interesting if Jay-Z is in your museum, man. You know, people are going to come to see Jay-Z in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man. To be a different demographic, man, but they don't, it's money. It's money coming through their doors. They got to pay their employees. You know, it's all about money. No matter what the fucking subject is, man, it all comes down to money.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
By speaking of Bob Dylan, by the time this episode airs on Monday the 24th, Bob Dylan will have turned 80. This is a freaking thought, man. Maybe we'll end on this.
Have you seen that Jay Lustig is doing a song a day from the Dylan records? I think that's really cool. I love that little piece that he does. Ooh. He did Stevie Wonder, Jay Lustig.
Oh, Jay from NJR.
NJR.
Yeah.
He did that Stevie Wonder.
That guy must never sleep, man.
He posts a lot. He's that very guy, active.
I mean, he can't have a big budget, man. You know, because he writes, him and another guy write basically everything, man. You know, I give that guy all the credit in the world, man. He's just tireless, man. He just keeps going, and he's just like never without content, man.
It's always very good talent. It's always very good content too. Even if I don't agree, I still read it through, and I'm like, man, it's just. It's well
he keeps his
out.
Social
well
media made. Going too, man. That's the thing. Like he's just as like tireless in his social media. I haven't seen what he's posted recently, man, because I don't go on that much.
He's very active. He's always very active.
I saw what he did with Elvis Costello, where he did an album a day or a song a day from the album.
Yeah, song a day from his albums. He did that with Dylan. He did it with Stevie Wonder. I think I'm missing somebody. I tried to get him to Pearl Jam. He said no.
Shit.
The Stevie Wonder one was great. I mean, he picked some, you know, you go back into Stevie Wonder's catalog. You know, like, Jesus Christ, he started when he was like 15 or whatever it was.
I know, man. He was already a legend by the time Talking Book came out. That's, go figure, man.
Yeah, right?
Think about that. He's 21 years old, man.
Yeah, he's a legend.
His first real album masterpiece, man, but he was already a legend.
Yeah. You know?
That was like... Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Bob Dylan's turning 80, man.
80.
I mean, it's like our rock stars weren't supposed to get old. We remember when we were growing up, our rock stars were in their 30s. We were in our teens, they were in their 30s, and they seemed old. Then they got into their 40s and 50s, man.
If they made it to 30.
Yeah.
That fateful 27.
He's done some of his most vital work in the last 20 years. That's the thing. You know, I remember when he turned 60. And since then, man, he's put out three or four of his best albums.
He's done a lot.
I mean, the guy is still relevant and vital, man. And, you know, I mean, guys like, you know, Tony Bennett, who has performed well after his 80s. Guys like Frankie Valli, who's performing well into his 80s. You know, even Sinatra. Sinatra didn't perform past his 70s. He didn't perform into his 80s. You know, there's Tony Bennett. There's Frankie Valli. I don't know who else there is. But there's Bob Dylan.
Chuck Berry.
You know,
Chuck Berry did it.
Chuck Berry.
B.B. King, I think he was another one, right? Didn't B.B. play into his 70s? Yeah. Was he 80?
But I guess more to the point was that he's continued to write. He's turning out vital work that's just as, I mean, relevant to the stuff going on today. You know, I mean, Murder Most Foul, Rough and Rowdy Ways, which came out last year. He's not sitting with his own death and more, you know, mortality. He's definitely sitting with Americas, if not both.
Hey, when I'm 80, I just want my brain not to be a fucking bowl of warm oatmeal. I mean, this guy's writing stuff that is relevant. I get it.
At this point, he's
sitting in bed drooling in his lap.
Where it's looking like things are slowly opening back up. We're getting words of tours being postponed, shows being postponed. And at the same time, dates continue to be announced for other tours. So by the time, I mean, we're a bi-weekly podcast. We're doing shows again. We're in this new season of episodes. And by the time we regroup again, who knows what's going to be canceled? Who knows what's going to be announced? It's going to be an interesting few months. Venues going back to full capacity. Radio City Music Hall just announced today that they're going back to full capacity in June. And that answers our question from last time. Yeah, you've got to be fully vaccinated for that.
That's going to be pretty interesting.
Sports venues are having, you know, they're getting closer and closer to, I think in Utah, man, I don't think the Utah Jazz, man, are having 5,700 people into their arena for their playoff game on Saturday.
Playoff?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got to watch the Lakers at 10, man. Lakers game.
I'll be sleeping. I hope the Lakers lose because I really don't like LeBron James.
I don't like the Golden State Warriors.
Fair enough.
I'm not digging this play-in tournament, man. I don't like the idea of it. I think it's stupid.
It's interesting. It's interesting as hell.
I'm just mathematically stupid, or I just don't understand what the purpose of it is, man. But this idea to find who the seventh and eighth seed is, why don't they just go with who came in seventh and eighth?
I always
cut out the 9 to 10 team.
I love winning your in games. I love them. From football, baseball, basketball, I don't care where they come from. Winning you're in, sign me up.